So jumping back into Ali Shor, we are on page 113, where Ravovi talks about tefillah. And so this is a four-page section. We're not going to do all four pages today. We're going to do more tefillah, God willing, next week. But we're actually going to skip this first section on the very top of the page. But basically, Ravovi's looking at tefillah, I feel, in a very real way. Ravovi, as I'm sure many of us know, Ravovi was a very real Jew. He was a Baal Tshuva. He lived in a lot of different worlds. He interacted with a lot of different people. And in tefillah, and really, I think, in many of the things that we learn with Ravovi, he gets it. And so it all really starts with the story that Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, who's almost homegrown, likes to tell. And a guy approaches his Rebbe, and says, "Rabbi, I've got a problem. I realize that I owe somebody some money. In a business transaction that we had, and I never paid him. It's been a little while now, and I'm not sure, do I need to give him money?" And he says, "Well, why wouldn't you?" He says, "Well, the guy's not Jewish, and technically, lehalacha, if a non-Jew makes a mistake in monetary interactions, we're not obligated to give money that could go toward Jewish funds and give it to the non-Jew. For the intricacies of that halakha, it's a lot more complex. Don't work in this morning, and I highly recommend that people always pay whatever they can. There are many, many stories about people going above and beyond, giving money when they didn't have to, and making massive Kiddush Hashem. But lehalakha, base obligation, if a Jew owes a non-Jew money and the non-Jew doesn't know about it, we call it ta'ut akum, a mistake that the non-Jew made, and you're not really obligated, per se, to give the money." And so the rabbi tells his student, and he says, "Well, why would you think that you need to?" And he says, "Well, I'm worried. The guy's going to realize that I still owe him money because it's going to make a kol Hashem." And this is the point of the story. And the rabbi says, "Well, when did you realize that you owe him money?" And he says, "During davening." He says, "Going don't daven. He's never going to realize." A lot of times during davening, our minds wander. They go a lot of places. In Lamatzeach that we say at the end of davening, we say Ela Barakah Ela Basusim Va'anakta B'Shem Hashem Elokeinu Naskir, that other people they travel. This is not the pshat, by the way. This is a cute drash. The pshat is that people battle with horses and chariots, and we battle with God's name. The cute drash is that other people they travel. How do they travel? They'll travel on trains and on buses and on horses and on chariots. But we, when do we travel? When we're saying God's name. When we're davening, that's when we're really. That's when we're traveling, we're getting everywhere that we want to go. That's where we're thinking about lots of different things. And Ravovi is addressing the challenge when we sit or stand to daven, that there's a whole world going on around us, and trying to make that connection with so much happening is challenging. Are there any extra sheets? Okay, great. And so in line 20, toward the bottom of our first page, he says, he's quoting the Rush. The Orchos Chaim of the Rush says, "Be'egia eis l'tfila, mishalosh tfilos, shel ayom yaniach kol oska v'ispalel." When it's time to daven, put aside everything and just daven. Easy, right? Maybe not so much. And so Ravovi says, "Yichem es kol ha'oskim asher rak lifnei rega hayinu shakuim bahem, ad kedei shikachas atzmeinu." We're totally enveloped in this. You're in an intense meeting. You've got all these things going on. You're living in your Google Calendar, and all of a sudden you're supposed to stop. You have 15 minutes at 1:30 in between a meeting and a phone call to daven mincha, and it's all back to back. You're supposed to just drop everything going on and just jump into davening. This past Friday morning, we had like a complicated thing going on at home, and I was supposed to give a shiur, and the whole time I'm like trying to focus on what we're doing, but also trying to think about the fact that I'm about to give a shiur. And when you're in multiple places, it's very hard. We're programmed to do one thing at a time. If you look psychologically and neurologically, human beings cannot multitask. We might be able to do things by rote, and then we're not really thinking about it. People will sew or knit while they're listening to something, while they're talking to somebody. They're not really sewing and knitting. They're not focused on it. It's become a force of habit. We walk and talk very easily because we don't think about our walking. But unless something becomes natural, we can't really do more than one thing at a time. Particularly when we're trying to focus our thoughts, we can't focus our thoughts on more than one thing at a time. There are exceptions. Apparently, Ulysses S. Grant was able to write in Greek and Latin at the same time with different hands. I don't know how people do that. Rav Avadia Yosef, Lahavdil, was able to do the same thing. He would speak and write simultaneously. I cannot imagine being able to do that. So maybe for Rav Avadya doesn't apply. But I think for most of us, multitasking, even those of us who are good at it, is still really not so possible and not so easy. And so when we've got all these things going on in our minds, how are we supposed to start davening? And he says after the question mark in line 22, Biadia, we know. Ki gam la'oskim elu drusha tefila b'kadeshi yatzlichu. The rak al yedei hatefila nira gam oskim elu bor hanachon uvekana amida amiti. But when it comes down to it, all the things we're worrying about, all the things that we're thinking about, what's really the key to them? You've got all these things that you're trying, freaking out about, you're focused on, that you want to succeed in. And we get so caught up in the things that we're thinking about, the things we're focusing on, and that we can't daven, we don't daven. But what's really the key to succeeding in any of our endeavors? To daven. Rabbi Mark Penner tells it, Rabbi Menachem Penner, the head of YU Smicha, tells a great story about how a few years ago he was in a meeting with a lot of big people talking about the future of Yeshiva University. There were some like monetary challenges that they've had. I don't really know where they're holding now, but they were having meetings and it was well known a few years ago. And so they were in their meeting, and then the time came, and thank God it's a Jewish organization. They daven mincha, and after mincha, he says he doesn't know what came over him to be so chutzpahdik, but he turns to all of the other people in the room and says, you know, we just davened. Did any of you daven for the future of Yeshiva University? Did any of you daven for our success? Or you were just davening? We were worrying about what's going on in my life, and then I daven, and these two are distinct things that do not connect, do not intersect whatsoever. And a lot of times that might be how we feel, that I've got my life and I've got my tefillah, and they're not the same thing. But they're supposed to be. That the craziness going on in our lives is what brings us to a powerful davening. That's what's supposed to be the focus and the starting point of our tefillah. We're in the parshios now of the Avos and Imahos, and consistently our Imahos were barren. And so there's a lot of ways to look at this. I've been looking into it more recently. And the assumption, the sort of base explanation that we get is a little bit underwhelming. But what's the base reason why the Imahos didn't have children? Because God wanted their tefillos. We heard this? So, to assume that God is so mean that he didn't allow Sarah and Rivka and Rachel to have children while everyone else was having kids, is like a little hard to swallow, but there's more to it than that, and something interesting to discuss another time. I'll just tell you one, because it's on my mind lately, that when the Imahos were supposed to have children, they were such miraculous people, and the Avos were such special, distinct individuals, that for them to be born naturally, the way that everyone else was born, wouldn't have worked. It had to be something that was supernatural. It had to be something unusual, something that went beyond nature. And so particularly with Yitzchak, that was born later on, but even with all of them, when it clearly wasn't going on its own, where you had to daven, that was a necessity for our forefathers and foremothers. But when we're in tefillah, when we're having a lot of things going on, maybe that's exactly why we have so much going on. We have so much happening because it's an opportunity for us to daven, for us to connect. Our lives are complicated and busy so that we can daven. And today, more so than any other time probably in history, is davening essential but also challenging. Very, very, I don't think that anyone ever had an issue of cell phones going off in the 1800s. When Chazal were davening, they didn't have a problem about someone's cell phone going off and knowing that they have an appointment coming up very shortly, or someone living in the city, working in the city and trying to chakap a mincha at some point somewhere. To some extent, as Ravolbi gets into, the experience of a female who is not obligated to daven in a minyan is actually much nicer. Because for men, it's very easy to just sort of jump into a minyan. Okay, this minyan is going to last 10 minutes, whether I want to go long or don't want to go long. But for a female, when you're not obligated to be in a minyan, maybe you still want to, there's an advantage, a halakhic ideal, that even women daven with a minyan, although it's very unlikely. But when you're not obligated, you don't have any other pressures around you, you can really take time beforehand to block things out, and you can focus on your tefillah. Gemara in Brachos says that the Hasidim Rishonim, the early pious people, not the pious Hasidim, but the deeply pious people, and maybe they had pious, I don't know, but the pious people used to spend an hour preparing for davening, an hour davening, and an hour after davening. That's 3 hours. I don't know if that's every morning, or that's 3 times a day. If it's 3 times a day, that's 9 hours of your day just in davening. Maybe it was just in the morning. An hour-long mincha is not something that comes up very often. But to be able to jump in, to stop and think and reflect in the piece that we didn't cover in Rav Volbi's Mavo Katzar LeTefillah, his small introduction to Tefillah earlier on the Sefer, he recommends that before davening, you take 3 seconds. He says a few moments. Take 3 seconds just to think about where I'm at. We discussed this, I think, last week. The Mishnah Berurah tells you should actually imagine you're walking into Hashem's throne chamber before you start tefillah to get yourself into the mindset. And when you don't have pressures of a minyan around you, it's actually much easier. There are times when I have deliberately not davened with a minyan. Not because I didn't want to, I didn't feel it was necessary, but because there are times when I knew it was not going to be an easy davening, it was going to be a simple davening. I didn't want all the outside pressures. And so I specifically did it by myself. Also, the halakha says if you're going to daven out loud, you're going to bother other people, you shouldn't do it publicly. And so at times, sometimes you just need to yell. And so I've davened privately so that I didn't have all those outside influences. I didn't get distracted. And then Rav Volbi continues with something that I find very, very interesting. He says, "Kashal Yisrachis, is it hard to concentrate?" In line 25, "Dimyonos and Machshavos Mafreim." You've got all these different things going on in your head. It's a simon he. It's an example. It's an indication. "Ki tarmi shlaknos kol oskim mineged, v'gamlo kashanu asam imat tefila." That your issues are in front of you, but they're not connected to your tefillah. When all of the things that are pulling us away from tefillah are pulling us away, all the things going on in our lives are distracting us from tefillah, it means that we're not aligning them with tefillah. But if, we often use these examples because they're more tangible, but if you had a lot of issues and all you needed to do was talk to the king, talk to the boss, and the boss can resolve them, then before tefillah you would organize everything you need to talk about. When I have meetings with my boss, I have a list of things. Now when we have meetings, he says, okay, what's on your list before anything else starts? Because I always have things we have to address. And so I'll hit all four pieces, and then we'll have whatever other discussion we need to. And so if it was really so clear in our minds that anything I'm going through is all up to a Kodesh Baruch Hu to fix and to resolve, then I would come to tefillah with a list. Maybe a literal list, maybe a mental list. But actually, people recommend that you should even write out a list. During our Brachos V'Shmoneh Esrei, we're allowed to insert things. During Refa'enu, we put things in. During Atachonin, if you feel like you need a little extra knowledge or intelligence insight, you can add your own things in. But we don't want to add in a ton. We want to add in like quick little things. During Elokai Netzor, you can go and go and go forever if you want. There's no concern about creating sort of a hefsek or an interruption. But during the other Brachos, we want a quick, just Kodesh Baruch Hu, I really need help with this presentation, and you really need help, you know, figuring out what to do about my child, if it's in Atachonin, and whatever the other examples are. When the Jewish people are in a lot of trouble, and we have all the different brachos about building Yerushalayim and bringing a new king, and just the brachos of Geula, can you say, Kodesh Baruch Hu, we really need a Geula right now? You can add them verbally. There's a preference to do it in Hebrew, although you could daven entirely in English, so that preference for Hebrew is kind of like a funny contradiction even, because you in theory could say the whole Shemoneh Esrei in English, and that would be totally fine. The reason we say it in Hebrew, even when it's not as easily for us, is because the words of Chazal are so deep, and we can't always access them. The very end of Rav Volbi's introduction is that even though, as we discussed, the sort of the introduction and the best way to engross ourselves in tefillah is to connect ourselves to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, still, understanding what you're saying can add a lot. And I mean, how many different times have you heard different explanations of something we're saying in Shemoneh Esrei? There's all this depth to it because it's the words of Chazal that were very, very deliberately put there. And there are allusions to parts of Tanakh. There's a lot of depth. And so we don't want to abandon that by using English. But of course, we can always talk to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, always talk to our parents in heaven in English. And so, so he says, if we're connecting tefillah to our issues, to our challenges, it's not going to pull us away, it's going to focus us. During Mincha today, I'm going to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for this person who's having difficulty finding a spouse, for this person who's having difficulty having children. And then that davening is not pulling you away because you're so worried about him or her who's having that challenge, but it's focused. That same thing that can pull you over there, if you put it in front of you, will lead you in the direction that you want to be. And so Rav Volbe highly recommends making that a priority before you jump into davening. And then he continues, and he says, toward the end of 26, V'lo od, elek terem ra'inu kol tzarkakak naka klala biyadka. But before we even get into assigning our goals and the things that we're asking for during davening, there's something we need to recognize. There's a klal biyadka, a rule in our hands. Hamafriya ha'ikari b'tfila hu gaiva. What's the number one thing that stops people from being able to daven? Gaiva. Haughtiness, ego. Now, what is haughtiness or an ego? I think if we envision it, someone maybe their chest is inflated. We talk about someone with a lot of hot air. They think that they're God's gift to the world. They think they can't do anything wrong. And, I don't think they made it onto the recording. We don't have to worry about it. But someone who feels like they don't make mistakes, and you can assign whomever you think that's appropriate. I think many of us know many people, both in the public world and in our personal lives, who don't make mistakes, who think that they're really God's gift to this planet. And so what happens when someone is a Baal Gaiva? Because there's more to it than that. Gaiva doesn't just look the way that we sort of make it into a caricature. Sometimes people themselves look like caricatures of Gaiva. But it's possible that some people, even in this room, have an element of Gaiva, of ego. It's really, translating Gaiva as ego or haughtiness is narrowing that midah to something that we don't want to hit. So I'm going to use the word gaiva, if that's okay. Gaiva, ego, haughtiness. And gaiva, if you don't think that you need help from anyone, that you can do it by yourself, you're never going to ask for help, which makes sense. But if you're never going to ask for help, then turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is something you're also not really going to do. You're not going to think, I need HaKadosh Baruch Hu for this activity. I get distracted by all the things in front of me. I'm not going to put them as the focus of my davening because I think that, well, what does God have to do with this? Why is God in the picture here? No, this is something that I can do. I have this challenge. It was given to me. Maybe God even gave it to me because I can handle it. So I'm not going to ask God for help in the thing that God gave me to accomplish. I can do it. I've got this. That's also an element of gaiva. Assuming ever that we don't need help is gaiva. It might be possible that you could accomplish it, but who says that that's the best way to do it? It's highly unlikely that if you do something entirely alone, it will be better than if there was other input involved. Sometimes there are reasons why we need to do right solo. We don't have time for 16 meetings to lead up to whatever we're trying to accomplish, but to get outside input, to not want outside input is gaiva. Malcolm Gladwell, who in his book, The Tipping Point, which I recommend, it's very interesting, points out something about a divorce. When someone gets divorced, there's obviously the loss of companionship and the life change that's impactful, but he says that people also feel like they're missing not just a piece of themselves spiritually or emotionally, but intellectually. Because there are certain things that spouses compensate for. And there's an area of knowledge that I have. Today, my area of knowledge and everyone's area of knowledge is huge because I don't need to know, per se, how to get somewhere. I don't need to know the address even. I don't need to know phone numbers anymore. All I have to do is type it in. I type it into my phone. My phone tells me this is how to get to the restaurant. These are this is the phone number. These are hours. And I don't have to remember that anymore. You used to have to like memorize phone numbers, which is totally gone. Now I know people, and not just millennials, who don't know their family members' phone numbers, which is crazy to me. Like, yeah, it's been on my phone forever, so I just know. I type in dad, and it's there. I type in son, and it's there. And thank God I know all of the important phone numbers in my life, so that should I ever not have my phone, I can still call my wife. But I have so much access to knowledge through my phone and through other people. When you're in a partnership with someone, particularly with a spouse, then you don't need to know everything. I help out spice things. I don't know. Like, in my mind, the only spices that should ever be on anything are salt, pepper, garlic powder, and onion powder. And I'm sure there are other good spices out there. I just don't know what they taste like or what they do. So I'll even like coat the chicken with whatever coating, but my wife has to pre-spice it. I'm incapable. I don't have that knowledge. But it doesn't matter. I don't need that knowledge because my wife has it. And if And my wife with many talents, cannot load the dishwasher well. I don't know. Apparently, this is like a thing that a lot of people have, that dishwasher loading is a specific skill set that exists and not everyone has it. And so I could probably do one load while she'll do two, because it just stacks differently. And she, every time I do it, she looks at it and says, I don't know how you did that. I was like, it just goes. But, and so when that relationship is no longer there, God forbid, then you lose that knowledge. You're not as capable. And so even someone who thinks that they know it all, that they've got it all, they don't realize what knowledge they have access to without even thinking about it, without it being clear in their minds. And so someone with gaiva is not even necessarily going to understand that. But when you want to understand the meat of gaiva, you look at the contrast. You look at anava, which is humility, not thinking so much of yourself. And at the end of Masechet Sota, it says something rather peculiar. And it's going through all the different negative impacts that a world without the Beis HaMikdash has. And now the Beis HaMikdash is gone, we don't have this, and we don't have that, and we don't have that. And then it talks about specific Rebbeim who brought something to the world that we no longer have access to. And so it says Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, who wrote the Mishnah, says now that Rebbe has died, the midah of anava, of humility, is gone from the world. Okay, he was a big... And then the Gemara says, Amar of Yosef, Rav Yosef jumps in and says, don't say that anava's gone, because don't worry, I'm here. which seems rather peculiar for someone to say, don't worry, I'm a big anav, I got this. And we've heard people who are big Bali guy point out how big of an anav they are, and they'll prove it to you. By the time you have to prove that, it's a little bit of an indication. But Rav Victor Nebensal, who's the chief rabbi of the Old City, who spends time learning in Yeshivat Netivariyeh, he spends time learning there, and the boys will go over and ask him questions. But sort of the funniest thing that happens with him learning in the building is that when a boy makes a siyum, they'll often invite Rav Nebensal, which is cute. But Rav Nebensal has finished Chas like 80 times. Sorry, like 60 times. And this boy is like finishing like the first Masechta he's ever looked at. And Rav Nebensal's like coming to the siyum, like, this is like nothing. Like, come on, who are you kidding? I can do this before lunch. But he comes, and he'll always say a few words. And so I remember this very clearly. We were on the porch of Netivari. If anyone's ever been there, it's a great place to have like a bar mitzvah, just by the way, free advertising for Nativ. And Rav Nevensal, and someone made a siyum on Sotin, so he was talking about this Gemara. And he says, what's Rav Yosef talking about? He says, when you recognize where you are relative to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then anava is very easy. It's very easy to see that you're not so impressive. And he says, even if you recognize where you are relative to where you could be, your potential relative to your actual, then not feeling haughty is actually not so hard. Because you know you're not doing that well. And Rav Nevensal, who is one of the Gedolim of this generation, he has learned more Torah than almost anyone else in the entire world, said, and it stuck in my mind forever, he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Yesh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is something. And he said, Avigdor Nevensal is Ayin, is nothing. This guy is Rav Nevensal got an award from the blood banks in Israel, because before they had databases, they didn't know if you were in Haifa or in Tel Aviv, if you've donated blood in the past 60 days or whatever the time frame is. So he used to donate blood all the time. And then when they collected all the data, they're like, wow, this guy, Avigdor Nevensal, has given an absurd amount of blood. He gave like four times more blood than like they recommend for health reasons, but he did it because he wanted to give up. This man is an extraordinary individual, but when he looks at whether it's himself or whether at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, no, there's no way that I'm anywhere that I should be, because he's looking at something much greater, much more impressive. Rav Soloveitchik writes about tefillah that unless we had establishment for davening, we would never be able to daven, because how could the finite ever approach the infinite? And so for Rav Nevensal, he sees that, because it's clear in his mind all the time, every day. And so Rav Volbi wants us to recognize that midah of gaiva is often what makes it so challenging for us to daven. When you think that there's nothing else out there, when you think that you are the key, you're not going to be able to turn to a Kadosh Baruch Hu and say, I need this. Help me. And so we'll continue a little bit more. On the bottom of the page, he says, Me'akorah ha'oskim ha'masikin eskola makshava. The person's got all these things going on in their head. Omer Adam Hamakshiv Sa'atzmo V'Afsa Od. The person can't get out of their head, and it just keeps going and going. You know, like you get stuck on a thought during davening, and then it like builds and builds and builds and builds, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, this is a long Shemoneh Esrei, but not the good kind of long Shemoneh Esrei. And he says, all the different things going on are just pulling us away. Oh wait, El Ha'adam Roa Es Atzmo B'Merkas Olam. But if you see yourself in the context of the world, of Oska, of Ikur Kiyam Ha'olam, and if you see what you're doing as the sustaining of the world, as opposed to a Kodesh Baruch Hu being the sustaining of the world, then you're not going to be able to focus. You're not going to be able to engage in tefillah. And skipping to the first paragraph and the second line. Oh, I didn't write line numbers here. I apologize. But the second paragraph where it says tefillah v'gaiva, we're going to finish up in just a moment. Tefillah v'gaiva, tarta d'sasrei hein. A tarta d'sasrei is when something is conflicting. The example that we get, it's a little too, we'll go for it anyway. In davening, over the summer we'll have this thing where we make early Shabbos. Why? How can you ever decide that Shabbos is going to come early and you daven Maariv when it's still light out? Because it's machlokas in the Gemara. What time can you start davening Maariv? Either you can start davening at Plag HaMincha, or you can start davening at Shkia, at sunset. So Plag HaMincha, half of Mincha, when it's almost sunset, or versus sunset, is a debate. When can you daven Maariv? If you're davening Maariv after Plag HaMincha, then Mincha should be before Plag HaMincha. Because effectively you're saying that this time period, starting from, we'll say, if 6 o'clock is Plag HaMincha, we'll say from 6 o'clock on, we're considering it nighttime. And so I can daven Maariv now. But so if 6 o'clock means it's nighttime, if you're following the opinion that says 6 o'clock is nighttime instead of 7 o'clock when the sun sets, then you can't. You have to daven Maariv then. You can't daven Mincha then. If you're telling me that 6 o'clock is night, then Mincha doesn't belong after 6. Is that clear? And so you can switch off every week. You can daven before Plag HaMincha. Daven Mincha before Plag HaMincha, make Shabbos after Plag HaMincha, no problem. You can daven right before Mincha, right before Shkia, and start Shabbos late. That's not a problem at all. Totally not late, on time. Someone pointed out to me this past summer, we don't make Shabbos late, we make Shabbos on time. They're all doing it early. But the Gemara's example of a Tarta D'Sasrei of two things that are conflicting one another is when if it's after Plag HaMincha and you're saying it's nighttime, it's not yet Shkia, it's not yet. Yet the other opinion of nighttime, you can't daven Mincha and Maariv during that hour. That's a no-no, because you can't say that it's both daytime and nighttime simultaneously. A tarta d'sasrei, two things that are the exact opposites that we're trying to put together. So tefillah, the experience of looking at a Kodesh Baruch Hu and saying, I'm not capable of doing everything, I'm not the be-all and end-all of the world, is a tarta d'sasrei with gaiva. It totally contrasts and contradicts what's going on when someone has gaiva. And so Avoli points out, in some ways, the key to davening well is to remove that gaiva from ourselves, to try and take that away. And then he just points out one more thing, and this is not as related to our gaiva piece, but at the end of this paragraph, before the three dots, three lines up, he says, Ma nifla ha-geder shaha yisod v'shor shavoda. The author of the Yisod v'shor shavoda gives an awesome, awesome recommendation. Lo lo mar b'tzfila yoser mishalosh milim b'vas achas. Don't say more than three words at a time. I don't know, when I lead davening, more than one person has pointed out that they appreciate the way that I parse the words. I don't think I'm extraordinary. I just follow the commas. When I learned how to daven, I followed commas in the Art School Siddur. The Art School Siddur will always have a comma, maybe four words later. But if you just pause at the commas, you're not going to fly through. You're always going to be taking a little bit longer. You're going to be a little bit more focused. And if you're a little bit more focused on your davening, and you're a little bit more focused on why you're davening and where you're davening, and you're a little bit less thinking about who you are and what you can do, but about what a Kodesh Baruch can do for you, then I think our davenings will be much, much stronger. So thank you very, very much. Have a wonderful week, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you.